Years ago, old me probably would have gone to the hospital for this, but yesterday my blood sugars plummeted to 42, which is also considered an urgent hypoglycemia, but not before skyrocketing to 300, also known as an urgent hyperglycemia. Now, both of which could easily be a reason to go to the hospital for very different reasons. But in today's training, I want to kind of update you guys on something that happened yesterday to me, what I learned from it, as well as show you windows of time where the rules of diabetes might shift without you knowing what to look for, and of course, even something like insulin, how it might be beneficial in some cases, but hurtful in others, so that you're more aware of these pieces and hopefully in an attempt to give you the tools necessary to avoid ending up in the hospital as well. Now, of course, with the theme of today's episode being pre-bolusing, insulin, timing, activity, meals, there's going to be some things that might border on medical discussion, and I want you to understand that nothing given in this episode is even remotely close to being considered medical advice. Please consult your doctors and don't listen to me for medical advice. I'm merely sharing some stories and some lessons that I've learned in hopes that you can pull some golden nuggets away from them as well. If you don't know who I am, my name is Matt Van De Vecht. I'm a certified master fitness trainer and nutritionist living with type 1 diabetes. And today we're going to break down some pretty serious stuff. Hope you enjoy.
I've spent the last 10 years pushing the limits while identifying trends and patterns in my type 1 diabetes management. Follow along as I learn, apply, and share the fitness, nutrition, and lifestyle strategies that I've learned from diabetes experts around the world. The real question is, how can we live fearlessly with diabetes while maintaining stable blood sugars? This podcast is here to give you the answer. My name is Matt Van De Vecht, head coach and co-founder of FTF Warrior, and welcome to Part of My Pancreas.
So that was no joke, that beginning intro there. My blood sugars really did have a couple wild swings. In fact, if you've ever had something like that where it goes from urgent low to urgent high, or even just the ups and downs, we call it the blood sugar roller coaster. I'll be honest, it's been a little while since I've seen those numbers, and I was pretty frustrated, had some emotions come up, and I was a little angry at myself, but also at the situation. And if you're on YouTube, let me know if you've ever had the blood sugar roller coaster or found yourself getting mad at the blood sugars, even though they're just numbers, because I certainly do. But the experience that I had surrounds my training for half Ironman, which at this point is less than 2 weeks away. And I am both thrilled and nervous, which, fun fact, the brain can't really differentiate between excitement and anxiety. So it's the same feeling, basically. It's going to be a blast. I know it will. And I'm doing everything I can to stay safe. But this last week, I had three events that kind of rattled my confidence a little bit. So today I want to break down what happened, how you can avoid it, and of course, how the timing of insulin can have a critical role in your success with day-to-day management, activity management, or even blood sugars during and after meals. And if you stay till the end, we're going to break down a really popular term called the pre-bolus and discuss a bit more about that. But no, this recent experience I had actually started on Tuesday. Tuesday was supposed to be my long run to give me confidence in my race, knowing that I could go the distance, that I could do the appropriate mileage. Now, the race that I'm taking part in, it's a half Ironman, and the entire race is 70.3 miles. So it's a 1.2 mile swim, a 56.6 mile bike, which I think is technically longer than it's supposed to be, but it is what it is. And the run is a half marathon, or 13 point something miles. I've never run that far in my life, so I wanted to prove to myself that I could run that far. And 2.5 miles in on Tuesday last week, had an urgent low. And it was the first time in the entirety of my training for triathlons as a whole that I have ever had to stop a workout because of a blood sugar. And I was pissed. I was really upset, both because it's the first time I broke my streak, right? I had this amazing streak, like 350 or 400 consecutive workouts in range, and it was just beautiful, all this confidence I had built up. But two is that this was essentially the make it or break it day. I needed to prove to myself that I could run that far so that I could go into the race confidently, and had to cut my workout short. I ended up making it 3.5 miles before my CGM was reading in the 40s. And I was like, great, I guess we're going home. And I was just sitting there waiting and waiting and took in a bunch of sugar and nothing was happening. And we're going to circle back to that example and kind of break down why it happened in just a sec. But before we do, the second example is actually 2 days later. And if you heard a few episodes ago, I talked about fear and type 1 diabetes when I had a hypothermia event. When I was practicing my open water swim, it came out violently shaking for 30 minutes. This whole training has been challenging, to say the least. But the second run that I went on was the true make it or break it event, because I had failed 2 days previous, right, where I had the urgent low. And I thought, okay, this is it. You got to get on and face your fears again. That urgent low kind of wiped you out that day. You need to prove to yourself you can run the distances. So I hopped back out there, and 2.5 miles in, as luck would have it, urgent low looming. My blood sugars were starting to drop really fast again. I said, there's no way I'm letting this happen. I chugged my whole bottle, which is 100 grams of sugar. And I said, you know what? I'm going to be here for 10 miles anyways. I'll be able to run that glucose off after it spikes. I just need to get my blood sugars up. And unfortunately, I did not stock my bag with the full amount of sugar that I typically bring on a long run like that. And so through a mixture of strategies where I was digging through my gym bag and found some protein bars and decided to eat protein bars while I was on the treadmill. That's not good for your stomach. Found some goo, which is like a sugary gel substance, and turned my pump off for increments of time during the run. Long story short, I actually never went low. The lowest I got, I think, was like 82. Highest I got was 138. Almost didn't make it. But as it started coming back down, I crossed the 10-mile marker and said, you know what, that was my milestone. I feel good about 10 miles, and I was able to succeed. And about an hour later, I was 200. I thought, what the heck, man? So these are two different examples. One where I went low and had to stop. Oh, and after that one, I did actually end up going high as well. This one, when I stayed in range and then saw a very delayed response in the blood sugars. And yesterday's experience where I went out for a leg workout and then a 5-mile run, and blood sugars crashed, and I think we ended up at 300 afterwards. So completed the run in range, everything looked great, went home, took a shower. I was at 117, I think, or 110, something like that. I thought, yes, I did it. Confidence is returning. And within an hour, I was 300. And it was frustrating. Now, there's a number of reasons this happened, but ultimately, the overarching theme for today is going to be the timelines of your blood sugar variables. So the timing of the things that we introduce play a massive role in the stability, or lack thereof, of our blood sugars. So a great example of this would be if I ate, let's say, 20 grams of carbs, and one of them was a salad, right? Broccoli, leafy greens, cruciferous vegetables, 20 carbs in the salad. And then I also had a different meal that was 20 grams of carbs of juice, right? Those are very different responses, but the numbers are technically the same. Similarly, if I were to introduce, let's say, the juice during a run, it might not do a whole lot because the run itself is balancing out the juice. The run causes a drop, the juice causes a rise. But if I had the juice an hour before my run, it would spike first, and then I would get stuck high, and then the run would bring it back down. So a big part of our goal with diabetes is just matching up those timelines so that when they balance out, it's in the moment, and we're not seeing large fluctuations, blood sugar roller coaster, right? So when I look at these different experiences that I had retroactively, and my clients, we call this retroactive analysis, where you assess the past and see what happened. The first run where I had an urgent low, it was real, and kind of knocked me off my feet for a bit there. That one I attribute now to a bad insulin pump site. The insulin that I had taken, which was just about 3 hours before that run, it did not finish circulating. And so immediately upon moving, because the site was in my glute, right, or my butt, I increased the blood flow, and it really did its work. It did what it was supposed to do, right? And because my insulin on board read zero, I have my insulin on board set aggressively to 3 hours, because for most of my sites, the insulin's done by then. At 3 hours, I went for this run, and there was likely still some insulin in circulation from a large dose that I took for breakfast. And so the remainder of that insulin that was still in circulation was still active. We call that active insulin on board, if you want to search that in our YouTube channel. That really took its toll, right? And I tanked. And that one, I actually did consume an enormous amount of sugar, and it felt like it did nothing. It was wild. So the first example was likely existing insulin from hours before. So this is the timeline thing again, right? The introduction of insulin 3 hours roughly before my run, which typically is fine, but because of the poor absorption and circulation in that site, I likely have some scar tissue there. That my theory is that that insulin was still active and ready and waiting. And so when I finally did get moving, the insulin also got moving. Now, the second event where I noticed that the sugar I did consume took a little while to catch up, but I never went low. It did finally catch and then stabilized. I ended up being, again, my theory, based on the protein bars that I consumed instead of fast-acting sugar. So the nice slow-rolling rise that I saw from 82 to 138 to 126, and that's kind of where I cruised out and ended my run at, I ran 10 miles and stayed between 82 and 138. That's wild, right? That's really tight control. I was really happy with that until I got home. And then the digestion finally caught up. And in that example, and this is something that actually has been proven, when we are active, especially in something like running 10 miles, right? Our blood flow is redirected from our gastrointestinal tract, GI tract, like your stomach, your small intestine, redirected from digesting the food over to the working muscle tissue, because we're telling our body, hey, you don't need to digest food right now. I want you to not fall over right now, right? The muscles need the blood flow. So it's almost like we're hitting pause on digestion, not entirely, right? But certainly slows it down in many cases. And in this case, because I had foods that were also slow to digest, proteins and fats, right? I did see a bit of a delayed impact from that. So when I did stop running, about 30 minutes later, I saw it start to creep up and thought, oh shoot, there's the protein bars, right? And it was a poor decision to consume those. But as I mentioned, excuse me, earlier in this episode, that was my make it or break it day. So I knew I needed to hit 10 miles if I wanted to regain the confidence from 2 days prior, where I had an urgent low at 2.5 miles in and thought, oh no, can I do this? And should I cancel this event? That was a real thought that I had. I was like, if I can't handle 2.5 miles, how am I supposed to handle 70? Right? So this second experience was likely, mostly attributed to a delayed in digestion, both because of the fuel selected. Protein bars are a lot slower digesting than sugar water, which is what I typically consume. But also, I was catching up to the drop in blood sugars. So my blood sugars had already started dropping, and I was just now introducing something that was slower to digest, and I was already in the middle of the activity, which also slows digestion. So when digestion finally did pick back up, the run was already over. There was nothing else to push blood sugars down, so all that was left for it to do was spike and take off. Now, this third example that I wanted to give you guys, I'll be honest, fear got the best of me, where I saw what happened previously, and I didn't want to experience another urgent low. This one was yesterday, and I saw blood sugars going down, and we're in 2 CGMs at the moment, and one of the CGMs did read in the 40s, and I was like, not today. This cannot happen. I need these confidence boosters. You know, it's only a week and a half or 2 weeks away from my race. And so I took all the sugar in, and blood sugars cruised again, 70s, 80s on my second CGM. The other one I found out was wrong. It went into the 40s and then stopped working. I was like, should I be worried, or is it just that it was a failed sensor? And then it came back later. It was in the 70s. So looking at the data, blood sugars cooperated well enough during the run, and immediately after the run, the rest of the sugar caught up. I responded in a panic when I saw the 40s, and I was like, I can't let that happen again. Just drink everything, right? And I chugged my water bottle. And considering it was only a 5 mile run this time, I did not need my whole water bottle, which is 100 grams of carbs, right? For a 10 mile run, absolutely. I ended up needing, I think, 150 carbs for the 10 mile run. And this one did not need the full water bottle. So unfortunately, fear got the best of me. Human error. This is another one that a lot of us talk about, or don't talk about. A lot of us experience, we don't talk about because we don't know we're making mistakes a lot of the times, because these are our subconscious decisions, right? Things that we act on because it's routine, habit, or out of fear, where fear drives our decisions. And those are the most difficult mistakes to correct a lot of the time, because if we're not aware of the mistakes we're making, how are we expected to fix them? Now, what I'd like to spend some time talking about is, in addition to the different variables at play here, the timelines, I want to talk about how I got the 300 blood sugar from yesterday back into range and spent the rest of the day 100% in range. So how did I remedy that situation, still end the day with a total above 90% time in range, which is what I'm known for, right? Actually, I haven't even checked this yet, so we'll do it live. We'll do it live. Anybody know that reference? So I'm going to look up my clarity reports right now. We're going to see what my current 90-day average looks like. Looking pretty solid. We got 95% time in range over the last 90 days. So I'm happy with that. Let's check out 7 days though, because I like to look at these to give me kind of a current report. Current report, we got 94% time in range. That's looking pretty good as well. So as somebody who has consistently maintained above 90% time and range for going on 5 years now, that's kind of my thing. And so when I see a 300, I know we got to take care of that before it wrecks my time and range. And so what I was actually able to utilize in this situation was the pre-bolus. Now, if you're unfamiliar with the pre-bolus, because I came back and it was lunchtime, the pre-bolus ultimately is just a term that describes taking insulin before you take your first bite. Now, in most doctor's offices and endo offices, they'll tell you, if you are about to have a meal, you take your insulin for the meal, and then you wait like 10 or 15 minutes, and then you eat your food. And that's what I was taught eventually. I wasn't taught that on day one, unfortunately. But there are a number of clients that I've worked with type 1 like me, who were told either nothing about the pre-bolus, they've never even heard of it. And by the way, I don't judge my clients for not knowing these things. This is their doctor's fault, 100%, or their medical team, right? Their endocrinologist. So either they're not told about the pre-bolus, or they were told not to do it. And that really upsets me. I sort of get the reasoning behind it. Doctors and endos would rather you not go low. They'd rather you go high, because highs don't kill you yet, but they'll kill you eventually. So I still prefer to stay perfectly in range if I can, right? But this idea of the pre-bolus ultimately is to try and balance out the timing of the insulin in circulation and the food that's digesting. That's the whole goal of the pre-bolus, right? In fact, if you want me to do like a full deep dive on this, drop the term pre-bolus. Maybe we'll do a whole video on it and I'll draw it out on the charts. That'd be kind of fun. But with the pre-bolus, I was going into lunch and my blood sugar is at 300. So with my blood sugars being that high, it's reasonable to assume the insulin might need more than 10 or 15 minutes, right? Especially if I'm introducing more food. Because if there's any chance that my blood sugar spike, it's going to be 400, 500. I'm going to go into DKA. I'm going to end up in the hospital. It's not worth it, right? So yesterday, would you believe it? My pre-bolus, as I timed it out, and we actually show our clients how to calculate this with an actual pre-bolus formula, so you know down to the minute how long you're supposed to wait. I'll give you a hint. It's not 10 to 15 for most people. It's a very introductory level strategy that the doctors give you. But my pre-bolus yesterday to bring down that 300 and stay in range was an hour and a half. So 10 to 15 minutes, huh? Is that how long we're going to wait, Mr. Doctor, Mrs. Doctor? No, terrible advice. See, the issue is that all of our diabetes decisions need to be dynamic in nature. We have to be able to change our strategies as the information we're presented with changes, or better said, our strategies must change as the situation changes. So if my blood sugars are perfectly in range, my standard pre-bolus, like how much time I give between insulin and first bite, typically about 20 minutes. And that's mine by the way. Not yours. You have your own unique pre-bolus formula, okay? And there's a number of variables that go into play there. But if you want to understand it better, because I think this will help, this is an analogy that actually one of my friends gave me, who's a medical professional. She's one of the few good ones out there. So shout out to her. But she gave me this example that she tells her patients. And I thought, this is fantastic. I got to tell you guys about this. So the pre-bolus, the entire goal being we're balancing our insulin and our food, she explains it as two friends going to a party, right? Now, those two friends live at separate houses, and of course, nobody wants to get to the party without their friend there, right? Because then you're standing in the corner just kind of twiddling your thumbs, and you don't know anybody there, and you're like, I'm just going to go home. Or like you find the dog, right? That's what I always did. I'm going to go pet the dog until my friends get here. But the goal is to arrive at the party you're going to with your friend at the same time as your friend, right? But the issue is that you and your friend live separately. Like you live in two different neighborhoods, and let's say you live further away from the party than your friend does. Your friend lives closer. So you have to leave earlier than your friend does in order to get to the party at the same time. So what we're looking at now is how much further away from the party are you than your friend is. And this is what the pre-bolus is. It's just trying to figure out how much further away does it have to be. So in this example, let's say that you live 20, we'll take my pre-bolus as an example. Let's say you live 20 minutes away from your friend, and then your friend leaves 10 minutes away from the party. So it's total time of 30, but it's 20 minutes before your friend leaves. Now your friend knows they're 10 minutes away, but they're gonna wait until you have reached their neighborhood, right? So you leave 20 minutes early so that you and your friend leave from the area at the same time, roughly, and get to the party the same time, roughly. Right? So that's the whole goal. You're trying to figure out how much earlier do I have to leave so that we arrive at the party at the same time. Now, with blood sugars being 300, that's like saying, I had a sleepover at somebody else's house last night and I'm even further away, right? Because now I'm an hour and a half away. I'm in a different city at that point. Like 300, that's a rough blood sugar. We can be real with that. I haven't seen 300 in ages. I was visibly upset. My wife was like, can you go for a walk? Can you take a chill pill? I was like, I'll be back. But the goal of my situation yesterday was to recalculate and recalibrate, right? So a blood sugar of 300, I am so much further away from the party, from the example, right? So I had to have the insulin leave an hour and a half before I took my first bite because my blood sugars had so much further down to travel before I was even close to being in range. And had I only waited the 10, 15, 20 minutes from getting my insulin to eating my food with a blood sugar of 300, I would have gotten to the party, quote unquote, right? Way before the friend. And in this example, that would mean a blood sugar spike. So if the timing is off, if insulin leaves too early, right? Like you end up catching up with the food, or sorry, the food hits first. Wrong example. There we go. If the food leaves too early, or if the insulin doesn't give it a head start, and they both leave at the same time, i.e. if you took your injection and then took your first bite at the same minute, your blood sugar is going to spike. Right? It's just not going to work out. The food gets there first. That's no fun. Now, if the insulin leaves way before, like let's say you take a 45-minute pre-bolus when your blood sugars are already at 70 or 80, right? Well, the insulin's going to hit first and you're going to go low. Like that's generally speaking what happens. Now, diabetes is very different for everybody, and everybody day to day has different decisions they have to make. So all of this is like contextually speaking, right? You need to think about these things, put your thinking cap on. But I want to give you this idea that the timing of your blood sugar variables, the timing of the decisions that you make, play a dramatic role in the stability of your blood sugars. In fact, I would argue that the timing of your insulin, if mastered, and the timing of your other blood sugar variables, if mastered, is the key to getting you off the blood sugar roller coaster. In fact, you know what? I wasn't planning on doing this, but I think I might even have a screenshot of the spike and the fall that I had. Let's double check. I do not. I'm sorry. I totally thought that I took a screenshot of it. But trust me on this. It crashed all the way down beautifully, landed in the 80s and 90s, and cruised there until dinner. And that's because I waited an hour and a half. Now, hour and a half, that's not always realistic, blah, 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 right? Excuses is what I hear. But the reality is that if you master the timing, you know what to do to manipulate your blood sugars, you're able to make these decisions in an empowered state where you know, hey, this is going to be okay. 300, that sucked. I was angry about that. But in my head, it was like, I know exactly what to do to bring this down. I'll be in range in no time. Right? We will remedy this. And I think that's the most powerful perspective you can maintain with diabetes, because with diabetes, there's going to be bad days. Like, there's going to be times where you make mistakes, or maybe the environment or situation makes things difficult for you and blood sugars just kind of go crazy. It's going to happen. So it's important. No, it's critical that you understand how to reset your blood sugars. Ultimately, how to manipulate your blood sugars in a way that benefits you, so that you can live your best life without being held back. Now, the pre-bolus, like I said, we can do a whole deep dive on that if that's something that would be helpful, and I'll draw it out. We can play with it, and I'll show you the ins and outs of kind of how we master it. But this is actually something that I'm going to be geeking out on, showing pictures and screenshots and little drawings in our Renegade Warriors newsletter this month. And the pre-bolus is something that, I mean, probably like a third of all of my clients that go through our program work on, and like they all work on it, but like a third of them, I would say it's life changing. Like that alone, they're like, that was worth it. That was worth working with you. It fixed like 90% of my problems. I'm like, good. You know, getting your pre-bolus formula dialed in is incredibly beneficial. So I decided we're going to do a huge deep dive in that with the Renegade Warriors newsletter, which I'm super pumped about. And if you're unfamiliar with that, or if for some reason you're living under a rock and you've like never heard of it, it's a type 1 diabetes magazine, ultimately, that we send out every month with strategies and deep dives like this, right? Where I'm going to be going into the details of how do you decide what the pre-bolus is? How do you know if it's 10 or 15 minutes? How do you know if it's an hour and a half like it was yesterday for me? How do you know if it's like negative 10 minutes? No one's talked about a negative pre-bolus before, right? There are circumstances that require you to change this. And if you don't, this is something that by itself could lead you into an urgent hypoglycemia or urgent hyperglycemia. Both sides of the equation. If the pre-bolus is not mastered, that alone could be a huge shift in your life. If you do not know the pre-bolus in and out, how to change it for different types of foods, different levels of activity that day, or different starting blood sugars, highly recommend you jump into the Renegade Warriors newsletter. In fact, you can't technically jump in right off the bat. Like, you have to check it out first. I don't let anybody just like jump in and buy it. You actually have to get the free one first because I want to make sure that you like it, that you actually find value in it. And oftentimes it's just like 20 or 30 pages. So it's chocked full of value, but it's not so much that you can't read it in one sitting, right? So those go out every single month. You can actually grab one, like I said, the free one at renegadenewsletter.com. And I'll put the link in the description as well. But going to be doing a whole deep dive in the pre-bolus, which I'm pumped about, because I think that that's one of the biggest doors we can swing open. You know, it's like with diabetes, if you can master the pre-bolus, it's like half the battle. So all that to say, I went on the run that I did 3 times in 1 week. Every single run had different outcomes. There were different variables at play. One was scar tissue and insulin absorption. Another was, digestion was slowed down, right? And I chose the wrong foods. It was the same carb counts, for what it's worth. I think that's interesting. Same carb counts, completely different outcomes. And then day 3 was my own fear, my subconscious getting in the way, right? And so be aware of these things. Understand that diabetes does shift on a day-to-day basis. And unless you know how to look for and identify those shifts, it can be a very dangerous minefield to navigate. So I hope this one was helpful for you. Again, pre-bolus, I'd start there. That's a big one. But overall, the timing of all of your variables are one of the most critical things to master if you are experiencing the blood sugar roller coaster. If you can master the timing of when to eat, when to exercise, when to take insulin, when not to take insulin, right? That's going to help you massively in resetting your blood sugars. And go grab the Renegade Warriors newsletter if you want to dive in with us into the pre-bolus. We've got a whole new training we're launching as well on the three levels of blood sugar impact, how to keep an eye out for those as well. So renegadenewsletter.com, go check it out, see if you like it, and then you can decide afterwards if you want to keep it. But I hope you guys love this one. I'll see you guys over in the newsletter. See you next episode, and keep up the fight.